My name is Rosemary Neves, and it's June 2nd, 2022. And I have with me Ron Rawson, who is going to tell us some of his stories. I'm just going to go through some of the information about Ron's family. His father's name was Wilfred Rawson. His mother's name was Agnes Stevenson. His wife's name is Doris Hannah Bovaire. Ron was born in July 25th, 1934, and his place of birth was Rosetown, Saskatchewan. Welcome, Ron, to the afternoon.
Thank you.
It's a gorgeous day, and it's in Athabasca that we're recording. So tell me where you would like to start with some of your stories.
Well, I suppose my dad and mother were married in 1924.
Yes.
We're going to start there.
Sure.
And so they first, my oldest brother was born in 1925, and my sister was born in 1930, and I was born in 1934, and I had another brother that was born in 36, and he passed away when he was 3 months old.
Oh my goodness.
And then my youngest brother was born in 1938. And
so that was a family of how many?
We had two brothers and a sister surviving.
Yes.
I guess when I started school, I suppose that's where you want to go from there. Or
Wherever. Where were you living?
Well, we were living at 22 and a half miles northwest of Rosetown at a community called Kingsland.
Oh.
And it was...
And that would be Saskatchewan?
In Saskatchewan, yeah. And my grandfather came to this country, in that country, in 1905 and homesteaded there.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. And he built the first the only Kingsland school that was there. Him and a neighbor built it in 1909. And his classes started in December of 1909, and my dad and some of his brothers and sisters went to that school, and then when I was old enough, I started school there when I was seven, along with two other boys and a girl, and
that was the class,
grade one,
mm-hmm.
grade one, and. There was eight grades in that school,
mm-hmm.
and the teacher had to look after all the kids, and she taught from grade one to grade eight, and they even said some of the kids took correspondence of grade nine and ten.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, and then they had to go to Rosetown for high school
mm-hmm.
after that. So, and when I got home from school at night, it was my job to look after my younger brother, because my sister worked with mother in the kitchen and my brother worked in the field with my dad.
Oh,
so I had to look after him. And he was 4 years younger than me. And so if he got into trouble there, I caught heck and got into trouble for letting him get into trouble. So I just had to look after him. That was the only thing I could do. But after I'd done it for a while, I finally got tired of it, and I decided I was going to leave home. Mother and Dad had this family that lived in Rosetown that they used to see once in a while, and Mr. Navy that was in Rosetown, he said, if you ever get tired of home life, farm life, you come and live with us.
Oh, really?
So I decided one day that when I was 10 or 11, somewhere in there, that I was going to leave home. So I took a loaf of bread and a sealer of water, and it was 22 miles to Rosetown.
Oh, my goodness.
And I took off a walk, and I The first night, I think I got about halfway there, and I spent the night in a straw stack that the farmer had put up with a thrashing machine. And I buried myself in that straw pile till, and then the coyotes were outside howling, and I just scared the heck out of me all night. And I buried myself in there right far as I could go. And the next morning, I made it to about 3 miles from Rosetown. And I stayed in the field so nobody would see me on the road. And I made it to about 3 miles from Rosetown, and I had to go across the bridge to get across Eagle Creek.
Oh.
And Mountie stopped me on the bridge, and he said, well, I don't know where I was going.
Yeah.
And I said, I was going to live with these people in Rosetown. And he said, well, does your mom and dad know you're gone? I said, no, I'm leaving. And so he said, I'll take you home. And I said, no, I really don't want to go home. But anyway, he talked me into it. And he said, I'll take you into town, buy you a lunch. And then he said, I'll take you home. And I said, well, I've still got some bread and water left. So after we had lunch, he took me home. And I thought I'd really get a good tan on when I got home. But all my mother had said to me was, we will not mention this to anybody in the community or any place, because a Mountie had to bring you home. We don't want the family people to think that the family was involved with the Mounties.
Oh.
So nobody knew about this till now.
Wow.
And so,
was it summer or winter?
It was in probably in July. Well, it must have been August, because the grain was tall and I walked in the grain so they wouldn't see me. I was fairly short.
Uh-huh.
And I walked in the grain so they couldn't see where I was going.
And yeah.
Apparently, my dad, the first night I didn't get home, I wasn't home for supper. And he said, well, when it gets dark, he'll be home. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't come home. So the next day they start looking around the community to see if I was at somebody's place, and it wasn't. So then I guess they were getting kind of worried, and Mountie showed up with me.
So do you think they called the Mountie to come and help, or?
Pardon?
Do you think they called them? No, they didn't.
No, because I just seen him when I was walking into town.
Okay.
And he seemed, I guess, a kid on the highway, so.
Yeah, most
anyway,
unusual.
Yeah, I still had to look after my brother. So anyway, and then after I was probably in about grade 4, I start lighting the fires for the school in the furnace. At every day I had to put a fire on.
Mm-hmm. Like a one room, it's one room.
One room schoolhouse, yeah. And I had a big furnace in the basement, and I used to go up every morning and light this fire. And I got paid 50 cents a day.
Did you?
You're putting the fire on. And in the wintertime, we lived a half a mile from the school.
Yeah.
So I used to walk up there. But in the wintertime, my granddad had a big grove of trees halfway between our place and the school. And so I would take the .22 with me and shoot rabbits on the way to school and on the way home. And when I got to school, I just hang the gun up in the barn, and nobody touched it. Nobody said a word. And that spring, I had enough hides of rabbits to sell, and I bought myself a pedaling bike.
Oh my goodness!
So after I had grade eight, I went to Rosetown for 2 years in high school, and I just hated the town life, and I quit in after I got grade 10, and I went back and farmed with my dad.
What was the situation in Rosetown? Did you live with somebody?
Yes, I boarded in Rosetown, yes.
Okay.
First time I boarded with in a rooming house. And if I couldn't get home in the wintertime on account of storms, she never fed the boarders on Sunday. So I only got $1 a week to spend in town. And so Sundays I didn't eat. If I had to stay in town, I didn't have anything to eat for all day. And so most of the time I got home, because there was another family, another boy that lived in Rosetown, and I could catch a ride home with him and back and forth. So there was the odd time I had to stay. And the second year I told my dad, I said, I'm not going back to that boarding place because it's not good. And so he got me a place at a widow's house, and she was really nice, Mrs. Lowe. She was a really nice kid, a good woman, and I liked it there. So, but I just didn't like the town life. And anyway, I had to go home in the springtime. I had to help my dad seed.
Sure.
For about probably 3 weeks. So I'd missed that much school. And in harvest time, I'd be gone a month to help him harvest. And I missed all that school in high school. I couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just did the doubt, I'm not going to do this anymore. So I went home and I worked with him till 1956. And Doris and I got married. And we bought a quarter section of our land. I had a quarter of my own land before that. And we bought another quarter of land. And we farmed that for from 1958 till 68. And then we took over Doris's dad and mom's farm, a section and a half there, and farmed it for the rest of our life at the farm.
Goodness.
And we had cattle on the farm, but we didn't have enough pasture to have very, very many cattle. So I built a hog barn in 1968, and we had it till about 75, and it burnt down.
Oh my goodness.
We went out of pigs, and I just went straight grain farming after that.
Wow. Did all the pigs die in the fire?
No. I got them all out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Actually, what had happened, I was burning the ditches on the road.
Yeah.
And before supper and then after supper, I went out to see if there was any fire going. And there was, I seen a fire about a half mile north of our place. I went up to put it out. And then Doris come out to tell me that we were going down to my brother's place for my niece's birthday. And there was a little bit of fire burning beside the trees, and all of a sudden a gust of wind hit it and took it into the trees, and half of the yard was on fire.
Oh my.
We lost the granary full of barley and two barns. And we were just lucky that we got the fire out before it done any damage to anybody else's property.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, we didn't bother with pigs anymore. We just went straight farming. And then in 1959, our first son was born in January, and our second son was born in February of 61, and our third son was born in December of 63. So, and we lived on that farm for 43 years, and the boys all went to school at the local school, and they ended up taking their education in Rosetown, their grade 12s.
Mm-hmm.
And Warren, the oldest son, after he graduated, he started farming with us, and he got himself a section of land, and we farmed together. And Dwayne decided that he wanted to be a mechanic, so he went and took a course. He was a heavy duty mechanic for 11 years, and then he decided he was going to go into the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And he joined them in 1990, and he spent 27 and a half years in the force. And my youngest son, he worked at a janitor, Stephen, at a janitor's place in Kindersley, doing for school. And he was there for about 5 or 6 years, and then he joined the Army, and he was in the armed services for 15 years. And he was over in Kosovo and Bosnia when they were fighting over there.
Oh my goodness.
And he came home and he worked for, he got out of, he had got a medical discharge because he'd hurt his back. He got a medical discharge out of the Army, and he worked for a company that done training for soldiers. They put software on them like Star Wars, and he would go to the trained soldiers like they'd be actually a battle, but it was all software stuff they put on them, and they would be able to tell if they got wounded or killed, and that's what he did for after he out of the army for about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. Now he's a peace officer in Lloydminster.
Okay.
And so Warren, my oldest son Warren, he after we sold the farm, he took a power engineering course, and he's at Fox Creek, Alberta, in the oil business. And I guess that's up to where we had our family. But before that, we have to go back to when I was a kid. I should have started it, but I had the feeling that I had to fly, and I couldn't understand.
That you had to fly?
I couldn't understand why I couldn't fly like a bird. And even before I went to school, I had this feeling. I used to lay out in the pasture and watch the birds flying around, and I couldn't figure out why I couldn't do it. So one time I took a pair of my sister's long cotton socks, and I stuck them all full of feathers that I found around the farm, and I put them on my arms, and I thought they would make a wing and I could fly, but that didn't work. So I took my grandmother's umbrella, and I jumped out of the loft of the hickory barn, and the umbrella turned inside out, and I hit the ground pretty hard.
Did you break any limbs?
No, I never. And my mother and dad used to have a whole bunch of turkeys, and they'd roost on top of the barn, and in the morning they'd take off and they'd fly around, make a circle in the pasture and land in the pasture. So I thought one night if I grabbed a turkey in each hand and jumped off the barn, that they would fly and I'd go with them.
That's very...
It didn't work.
Imaginary.
I hit the ground pretty hard.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't break anything, but the darn dog thought the turkeys were attacking me, and he jumped in there and he tore the back end out of one turkey.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought Dad would found that out, he would get rid of my dog. So I took the turkey and threw it in the trees and told him that an owl had come down and got it.
It's a strange owl.
He used to tell the neighbors that. And I used to feel about 2 inches tall. But I never did tell them the truth. But I should have. But I didn't. So anyway, after we were married in 1973, I took my pilot's license.
And, did you really?
I got my license, and we rented a club plane for a couple of years, and after that, we bought a 150 Cessna, a two-seater, and we flew that airplane for quite a few hours, and then I sold it, and I bought a four-seater, a 172. Cessna, and we flew it till 1996.
Where were some of the places that you went?
Oh, we were pretty well all over Saskatchewan, and I think about 1980 we flew down to Harlington, Texas with another couple in his airplane, and we were gone for a month, and we just flew around in Saskatchewan. We joined the Flying Farmers.
Oh,
Saskatchewan Flying Farmers, and
Alberta.
We used to go to all the...
Alberta.
Huh?
Alberta.
What do you mean Alberta? Oh, we flew into Alberta, too. Oh. Yeah, they had Flying Farmers conventions in Hanna, and where else did we come is Alberta.
Tell me about the Flying Farmers. I've never heard of them.
Well, there was an organization of farmers that owned airplanes, and they used them for... mostly recreational, and some of the farmers used them for spraying with, and it was an organized Saskatchewan, and actually it's an international organization in the States too. We belong to the Saskatchewan Flying Farmers, and we belong to the International Flying Farmers. Uh-huh. And what year did you become queen?
Oh.
Huh? Yeah.
You were president.
Oh, I was president of the Flying Farmers in 93. And then Doris became queen of the Saskatchewan Flying Farmers. And so we flew down to Abilene,
City.
Texas, to a convention down there. And
Rapid City. Rapid City.
Rapid City, yeah. Rapid City in the States.
Okay.
And it got so expensive to insure the airplane.
Oh.
The last year I had it, it cost me $235 an hour to fly it. Uh-oh. Insurance was terrible. And so then we farmed for 43 years. And then we sold out to the Hutterites in 1998. And we moved into Rosetown and bought a place in there. And I started to work for the Rosetown radio station, being a farm news broadcaster.
Oh.
I did that for 6 months, and it was just too much work.
You went around and interviewed people? And
and getting farm news and stuff like that. But I had to be at work at 5 in the morning to get the news on by 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then they expected you to go to all the farm meetings at night, and sometimes you wouldn't get home until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and had to get up at 5. Well, yeah. I was 65 then, and that was just, it was getting too much, so I quit there. And Wheatland Regional Center is the same thing as the Blue Heron here, their recycling depot. And they have all handicapped people that they work there.
Mm-hmm.
So the boss that was a CEO of Wheatland, he asked me one day if I wanted to come and build him a couple of trailers for cardboard in. So I did that. And then he said, how would you like to come work for us full time? And I said, well, I could if I could work my own hours. And he said, yes. So when I went to sign up, I said, I just joined the government payroll. And he said, are you 65? And I said, yeah. Well, he says, I can't hire you because we have a policy here. You can't be 65 and hire you. But he says, I can contract you. So I was there for 18 years.
My goodness.
And that's when I quit in 2018, and we moved up to Athabasca, Alberta, into Baptiste Lake, to be closer to our sons and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And it's just been wonderful. It was an awful thing to leave home, Rosetown. The worst part of leaving the guys at work, because they were just so loving. If I'd have known what that field was in when I started to farm, I probably wouldn't have farmed. I probably would have worked with them people.
With the handicap group?
Yep. Yeah, I just fell in love with them.
Yeah.
They're great. And so after I worked there till 2018, and the boys, the kids up here, my grandkids and my son, they kept saying, why don't you come and live up close to us? So Dwayne had bought a cabin at Baptiste Lake, and he wanted us to come up and take it over to look after it for him till he gets retired or when he wanted. So
mm-hmm.
That's what we did. And it's been wonderful up here. We've met some wonderful people, and we've got involved with the community. And it's just so good. Like we've got 7 grandkids and 9 great-grandkids, and so we're all close. We're within 3 hours of all of them now. And before that, we were 9 hours for a trip up here to Fox Creek, or up at Athabasca was 8 hours. So we didn't get to see the grandkids very often,
mm-hmm.
but now we see them regular. And it's been wonderful.
And yeah, it sort of adds a whole dynamic to your lives, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Close by.
Yes, it does. Yes. Yeah, and we've had a really good life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Doris and I have done just about everything that was impossible to do. We've done it.
Well, motorbike.
Huh?
Motorbike.
Oh, motorbike. Yeah. We start riding the motorbike when I was 70 years old, and toured Alaska for a month on the motorbike, and we've been to Sturgis. South Dakota, to a motorcycle rally down there.
Oh, good for you.
We've been in Manitoba.
Well, when did the motorcycle come up?
Pardon?
How many years ago that you started?
Well, I was 70 years old then when we started bought the motorcycle. Okay.
Just after we sold the farm.
Yeah, it'd be about 1969 or 70.
Okay.
69. We used to, every first weekend in June, we used to ride out to Banff with three generations, two sons and three grandsons.
Wow.
Yeah.
All on motorcycles.
All on motorcycles, yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty special.
We've had a great life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no regrets.
And you're still having fun.
And we're still having fun. Yeah, and I get involved in the community up here. We the church, yes. And we deliver Meals on Wheels. And
yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, and
worship packages and.
I don't know. Just
being part of the Lions too. Haven't
yes,
you?
I'm a member of the Lions Club here. I was in Rosetown as a Lions member. Probably a Lions member for at least 20 years or more.
Oh. You mean in Rosetown and now here?
Yeah, now here, yeah. We helped start Citizens on Patrol in Rosetown.
Oh.
And we've done that for 15 years before we moved up here. And then when we came up to Athabasca, we joined Citizens on Patrol up here. But they have since now quit. Because mm-hmm. it got too dangerous, I guess. And mm-hmm. We're guards at the jail in Rosetown. And
how big is Rosetown?
Yeah, it's about 3,200 people.
Mm, much like this?
About the same as here, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, all our kids now are in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got my pilot's license, that was one of the things I was glad I had done. Because Doris loved to fly too, and if anything was bothering me on the farm about maybe I had bills he'd got paid or something like this, yeah. I'd just go up in the airplane for a couple hours, for an hour, and I'd forget about everything except flying.
Yeah,
and
wow.
That was the best medicine for me, that, and probably Doris too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's something that you had that sort of dream for a long, long time.
I dreamt of that for years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You forgot to tell about what your uncle told you.
Oh, gosh, yeah. When I was about 5 years old, talked about flying, and my uncle, Jim, he said to me one day, he said, you go out to the pasture, and you find old dead hens or roosters, and you pull the wings off them. And when you go to bed at night, you lay them on your shoulders on your pillow, and they'll grow on and you'll be able to fly.
Oh.
And so that was one of the worst fights my mother and I had, because she would let me put that dirty old wings in the bed. I said, but Uncle Jim said that this would work, and she says, I'll Uncle Jim in when I see him. Before I went to school, I used to travel around a little bit and take off on my own. And I know I walked over to neighbors one time and was riding around him on the seed drill when he was pulling it with horses, and I was riding on the seed drill with him when my sister came to find me.
Put up off the ground.
I guess that was adventurous.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Goodness me.
But, yeah, it was, I guess I'm only one left of the Rawson family.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I guess I was council for the RMA Mountain View in Herschel from 1985 to 1998, and as I was on the council there, I was also on the Rosetown Hospital Board representing the RMA Mountain View for 8 years.
Wow.
And I was also on the Saskatchewan Ambulance Board for 5 years. I was on the Saskatchewan Ambulance Board. And also I worked for 6 months from 1998 to for 6 months at Rosetown radio station CJYM as a farm news broadcaster. And
that's exciting.
Yeah, it was hard. I don't know if I mentioned before, but when I was trying to fly, I built myself an airplane out of wood, old barn wood. I took some of my dad's binder canvas and cut it up to make the covering for the wings and the tail. And I figured that, and we had a big hill in the pasture, I figured that if I could get that thing to roll down the hill, it would take off, but it wouldn't do that. So one day I decided to hook the horse onto it, and I got her going, and this thing goes plop along behind her. She got scared and took off, and start falling apart. It's a wonder I didn't get killed, but anyway, she ran in the barn door with everything and hooked the harness on the door and tore the harness off her, and I didn't get hurt, but I was badly shaken up. And the worst part was that when my dad found out I'd cut up his canvas, I couldn't sit down for a week to eat supper or dinner.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, he was pretty mad.
Well, you were in it when she was running.
Right? Yeah.
Wow.
I wanted to fly so bad that I'd have done anything to do it. So
yeah.
That was probably my last experience of trying. Until I got my pilot's license, and then, but.
What prompted you to get into the actual flying farmers like that you told?
Well, after we got my pilot's license and we bought an airplane, then we joined the Flying Farmers, Saskatchewan Flying Farmers, and it was an organization of farmers that owned airplanes and used them for agriculture as well as recreation. And we used to have a convention once a year,
mm-hmm.
at different cities. And
safety seminars.
And we had we'd have safety seminars, and we'd also have a president of the flying club of Saskatchewan Flying Farmers would hold a president's flying day, mm-hmm. and they'd fly into his day, president day, wherever that may be. And we used to go to different. Fly-in breakfast in the different provinces, and we just enjoyed it, and it was a feeling that when I got up in the air in that airplane, I forgot about everything else but the fly, and it was just a wonderful relaxation, and you forgot about everything, any troubles that you ever had.
Yeah. No fear at all?
No.
Tell about flying, fishing?
Oh yeah, we flew up north to different lakes to fly in fishing camps, and it was only one incident I had when I had the airplane. Was I was going to fly down to Swift Current to pick another guy up that had taken his airplane down to get some work done on it, and when I took off, he had flown over home, and when I took off to got in the air looking around to find him, and my motor quit. And I had to land in the field ahead of me, and that was the only time I ever had any thrills other than flying it. I didn't hurt the airplane any. I didn't get hurt either. We landed in the field, and
wow.
It was just the gas line that froze up in the airplane. And
it was in the
spring of the year, and I.
Instructor.
I don't really know what happened, why I had water in it, but it quit anyhow. That was the only time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, how many years did you fly?
I flew from 1973 to about 96, I guess it was.
97,
I sold the airplane, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, certainly a dream come true.
It was a dream come true. It was a beautiful dream, too, yeah. It was, when I was a kid, I couldn't get that thought out of my head, no matter whatever I'd done. And it was just wonderful,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful experience, yeah. And
Must have been hard to give it up, I would think.
It was, and the only reason I gave it up, I was probably about, I must be 90, but I'd be what, 90, I'd be...
60 years.
Oh, I was 70 something. And I thought if something happened to me when I'm up there, I have a heart attack or something like that, and anybody that was with me would have been gone when I didn't know how to fly, so I thought I'd had a pretty good run at it, so I thought I better turn up my quit it before something happened. Because two of my friends had heart attacks in the airplane when they were flying, and lucky the airplane landed and never they didn't get hurt, so it was just a miracle that they got down without being hurt.
Yeah, for sure. Ron would like to add a story of some of the activities he did as a Santa Claus. Ron?
Yeah, I probably did Santa Claus for at least 25 years. When we were out in the country, our farm, we used to do it for our community and a couple of communities, surrounding communities. And after we moved into Rosetown, I started doing it for the kindergarten in Rosetown and also the play school. And sometimes the stores would have Santa Claus Day, so I'd help do that for them then. And I just had a ball with the kids, and I have albums from daycare and kindergarten. I probably got 15 years of pictures of the kids that I did Santa Claus when they're in daycare and kindergarten. And it was just a wonderful feeling. And we had a couple of boys that lived across the street from us, and they were little, and I used to go over there every day, every time before Christmas. And they seen me coming out of the house one time, and so they wanted to know what Santa Claus was doing in our house, and I said, well, somebody had to feed him for dinner. And they said, oh, well, that was really nice of you.
Quick thinking.
Yeah. And, you know, it was comical that some of the stuff the kids would say, like, I was in kindergarten one time, and one little girl came up and she said, you're not the real Santa Claus. And I said, what makes you think that? She says, look at our Santa Claus on the wall picture. He's got green boots on, and you've got black boots on. And I said, well, I only use the green boots on Christmas Eve when I'm going around the country. She said, well, that's sure nice. And one little guy was at community center. One little guy, his mom couldn't get him to come see Santa Claus. And his grandfather and I used to work at Wheatland Regional Center. And we were shingling a garage roof one time, and this hip kid and his brother were up on the roof running around with us on the roof. And so I seen that his mother couldn't get him to come over, and I said, Braden, how come you're scared of Santa Claus if you could get up on the roof of a garage and run around? Well, you may as well have slapped him on the side of the head, because he just stopped and he couldn't believe that I knew that Santa Claus knew that he was up on the roof. And so about a week later, I was at kindergarten, and he was in kindergarten. And as soon as I walked in the door, he said to the teacher, he says, he knows everything. And just stuff like that, it just sticks in. Your memory just stays with you. And one little guy said to me, he said, you're not the real Santa Claus. And I said, well, what makes you think that? Well, he says, how come your eyebrows are brown and Santa Claus' eyebrows are white? And I said, well, you know, Santa Claus smokes a pipe. So I said, the smoke curling up from the pipe makes his eyebrows brown. He said, oh, I don't know whether you believe me or not, but I could go on forever telling stories about what the kids did. And one little girl at the community center one time, and she said to me, Santa, you're always giving people gifts, so I'm going to give you one. So she gave me one, and then she told me what she wanted for Christmas. Well, about a week later, I went to kindergarten, and here's this little girl there, and she just put her arms on her, hands on her hips, and swaggered up to me, and she said, "I bet you don't remember what I asked for the other day, do you?" And I said, "No, I don't really remember, but I said, I have it all wrote down in my book." She said, "Well, that's very nice." As soon as I seen her coming up, I knew I was in trouble because she just had that swagger to her. I just had so much fun. And when we moved up here to Athabasca, the first year we were here, I went up to Mom and Tot's school up on the top of the hill here. And I went up there the first Christmas we were here. Uh-huh. But then COVID hit, so I haven't been back.
Oh, I see.
And when we go singing at the lodge and
extended care,
I always wear my suits on Christmas.
Oh, good. There.
Yeah.
Oh. Patients would get a lot of fun out of that.
It's fun, yeah. It's fun. And, you know, the people in the extended care and the lodge, they just shine when they see you come in. Mm-hmm. I guess they think about their childhood, I guess. And
sure.
Yeah. It just gives you a good feeling. Yeah.
So Athabasca's got another Santa Claus.
I'm disappointed when COVID hit. I couldn't do it anymore. So.
Yeah.
But
maybe this year.
I probably will, yeah. No, I think that's about it.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.